This recording is a service of the Allen County Public Library's audio reading service. It is specifically designed for and directed to people who have visual, physical, learning, or language challenges to reading traditional printed materials.
Able Living focuses on the needs of people with different abilities. Hear a wealth of information on health, work life, sports, the arts, individual accomplishments, and much more, all focused on other-abled human potential. Able Living, coming up right now on your audio reading service.
Welcome, this is Able Living, and I'm your reader, Kevin, with the audio reading service at the Allen County Public Library in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Today I'll be reading from Disability Scoop, and now I'll begin with Parents Sue Founder of the Trust Fund That Lost $100 Million. This article written by Christopher O'Donnell of the Tampa Bay Times. Shel Martin's leg was amputated in 2022 after her car was hit by an Uber driver that crossed the median close to US 19 and Alderman Road, sending her into a ditch. She agreed on a settlement for more than $1 million in damages and put more than $700,000 into a trust fund to replace her lost income from no longer being able to work and to pay for ongoing medical expenses. Martin, age 59, hoped to also buy a home, something very small, just for me. But earlier in February, Martin was devastated when she received a notice that the nonprofit that administers her trust and some 2,000 others has filed for bankruptcy protection after discovering that $100 million is missing from their accounts. Almost $400,000 is missing from her trust fund. "I've been crying, crying, crying," said Martin, speaking from her sister's home in Reno, Nevada. In his February 9th bankruptcy filing, the Center for Special Needs Trust Administration states that the group's founder, Leo Giovanni, took money from more than 1,500 trust funds through an unsanctioned loan to the Boston Finance Group, a company he owned. The nonprofit plans to pursue his companies as part of its bankruptcy process. Meanwhile, a Palm Beach County family this week filed a class-action lawsuit against Giovanni, his business partners, and his companies for running a decades-long predatory scheme that allowed Giovanni and his business partners to drain more than 1,500 trust funds set up for individuals with disabilities and others with complex medical needs. The lawsuit was brought by Kelly and Todd Chamberlain, who spent 9 years fighting in the courts to prove that their son Clark was the victim of medical malpractice after he suffered catastrophic brain injury shortly after his birth in 2011. The damages that the couple won on behalf of their son exceeded $1.5 million, court records show. The money was placed in a special needs trust fund to help pay for the boy's extensive medical expenses over the next 40 years. The lawsuit filed in federal court in Tampa does not state how much of the money is missing from Clark's trust, but it accuses Giovanni and his business partners John Staunton and Jonathan Golden of leaving already vulnerable individuals without a means of much-needed financial support. The center is not named in the lawsuit, but is heavily criticized by Chamberlain's attorneys for its handling of trust funds following the departure of Giovanni in 2009. The center waited 22 months before advising trust holders about the loan, which had gone into default in 2017, and has taken no reasonable action to sue Boston Finance or its principals, the lawsuit states. In a statement released in response to the class action lawsuit, officials from the center said as soon as they learned of the existence of the loan, they began an investigation while also continuing to manage the needs of the trust beneficiaries. The current leadership of the Center for Special Needs Trust Administration has at all times acted with the best interest of the center beneficiaries and to do the best of their abilities, the statement reads. They're deeply troubled by the actions of the companies and people involved. But center officials have acknowledged that they will not be able to make payments to beneficiaries who no longer have sufficient funds. It's unknown how many have been left with zero balances. Bankruptcy documents show that almost 900 trusts were left with balances of less than $500. The attorneys for the Chamberlains are also suing American Momentum Bank, a Texas charter bank, where the trust funds were deposited, for approving numerous transfers of trust money to the Boston Finance Group, a company owned by Giovanni that also had accounts at Momentum. That bank was apparently asleep at the switch despite numerous red flags that any reasonable bank would have acted to address a decade ago, the lawsuit states. Officials from the bank said they will comment after they have completed a review of what has been alleged in court documents. "We can share that safety and security of all our valued American Momentum Bank clients, and their assets are always our top priorities," the statement reads. In addition to serving as the center's president, Giovanni, 65, was also on its board of directors. His Boston Finance Company shares the same address as Big Storm Brewing Company Tap Room on 49th Street North in Clearwater. Big Storm is owned by Giovanni's son, L.J. Giovanni. A suite housing the Elder Law Center at Stetson University College of Law is named after Giovanni and Staunton. University officials said that Giovanni last week resigned from the law school's board of overseers. The lawsuit also named several companies based in Florida, Delaware, and Minnesota that states Giovanni, Staunton, and Golden controlled, including Boston Finance and Boston Asset Management. Staunton and Golden are both attorneys who live in Pinellas County. Staunton co-founded the center with Giovanni, state records show. Giovanni and Staunton did not return calls seeking comment. Golden could not be reached for comment. Eric Koenig, Giovanni's attorney, did not return a call and email seeking comment. He previously said Giovanni denies the allegations made by the center in its bankruptcy filing. Clearwater resident Lori Snyder, age 69, relied on her trust fund to make payments on her car and her car insurance. Her husband set up the fund before he died so that she would have additional income. It should have had more than $15,000, but almost $12,000 is now missing, she said. Snyder, who also receives food stamps, said she was in shock. She's reached out to her insurance company to switch her payments to monthly, but she said it's going to be a struggle. If I live within a budget and do not do any excessive shopping, but just basic needs, I'll be okay, she said. I'd rather live independently than rely on others. Trust fund holders who want more information about the status of their accounts can call the center at 1-877-516-1667. Our next article, written by Lily Germa of Bloomberg News, accessible travel, a $58 billion market, gets its first one-stop shop. Before the COVID-19 pandemic, Americans with disabilities made up an active, rapidly growing segment of the travel industry. In 2018 and 2019, at least 70% of them, that's 28 million people, collectively spent almost $59 billion on trips, according to a 2020 nationwide study conducted by the Harris Poll. The report commissioned by Open Doors Organization, an accessible travel advocacy group, shows that such spending has skyrocketed, up almost 340% from $17.3 billion in 2015. Still, more than 70% of travelers with disabilities reported that they encountered major obstacles in dealing with airlines, airports, cruise lines, and hotels. Last month, hotel-focused booking platform Accessible Go announced a wide-reaching expansion to make it simpler for travelers with disabilities to plan trips. Having helped them find rooms with up to 7 special accessibility features in 180 destinations across the U.S. since 2018, the platform is moving to address nearly every facet of a vacation, from flights to airport transfers and car rentals. There was very limited interest in our demographic when we started in 2018, said Miriam Elias, Accessible Go's co-founder and chief executive officer, who was inspired to create the site after traveling with her late mother, who had multiple sclerosis. Now it's really changed. There's been this awakening in the travel industry that there is this market, and they want to travel, and they have these needs that must be met. To wit, Elias says that Accessible Go's booking volume was 4 times higher in 2023 than in the prior year. For travelers with disabilities, booking a vacation can be far from seamless. It's not always guaranteed, for instance, that a traveler in a wheelchair will receive prompt service at an airport, whether they're traveling with a service animal or need assistance to get from check-in counter to the gate. Even if they obtain the requested room with a roll-in shower or a fridge to store medicine, they might find accessibility features to be insufficient in the same hotel's lobby and restaurants. And when it comes to transportation around their destinations, a rental car might lack the necessary add-on features, while public transit might be short on wheelchair-accessible options. As the first one-stop shop for accessible travel in the U.S., Accessible Go is addressing all of this. Book a flight on its site, for instance, and you can add specific special needs requests. A new rental car portal has options from all the major companies, including wheelchair vans and such optional accessibility features as spinner knobs that make it easier to steer with one hand. Users can book wheelchair-accessible taxi services and rent mobility accessories and hotel aids like scooters, wheelchairs, and Hoyer lifts, which help with the shift from bed to wheelchair and vice versa. Part of what complicates the expansion is a continued need for white glove service, as Elias describes it, to ameliorate, if not quite eliminate, blunders by airlines and other providers. While the Americans with Disabilities Act and Air Carrier Access Act legally require buildings and airlines in the U.S. to accommodate wheelchair users in specific and detailed ways, it can be onerous to confirm that they will meet that moment. This usually requires lengthy discussions with customer service. Accessible Go is taking on that responsibility for every hotel, flight, and car rental booking made on its platform. It's a core part of our proposition that makes people trust us and understand we've got their back, said Elias. And that's a very big part of working with this demographic, making them feel confident and safe. Eric Lipp, founder and executive director at Open Doors Organization, says this service is Accessible Go's biggest competitive advantage. A lot of times information doesn't get conveyed from a third-party vendor, such as Booking.com or Expedia, to the carrier, cruise line, or hotel, he explains. Accessible Go is not alone in trying to address this large but overlooked market. Competition now includes Wheel the World, which offers hotels, activities, and group tours in 117 global destinations, and Responsible Travel, a marketplace for multi-day tours whose website includes a filter for accessible itineraries around the world. Such services are growing at a pace with accessible advocacy. Groups like the International Air Transport Association, International Civil Aviation Organization, Airlines for America are all discussing accessibility with greater urgency. Accessible Go thus faces challenges to dominate the market. It must grow quickly to serve international destinations and to add activities and tours before competitors catch up on the airline and car rental fronts. The company is scaling up its reach by partnering with the ARC, a nonprofit organization with 800 nationwide chapters for people with developmental disabilities. In exchange for marketing access to the ARC's sizable user base, Accessible Go is creating a give-back program to support the nonprofit. It hopes to replicate this model with other nonprofits in the near future. Meanwhile, with Open Doors' next national study already underway, the market for accessible travel seems certain to keep growing. I can tell you, just looking at the number of wheelchair pushers who help travelers with disabilities at airports, says Lipp, we are out in pretty full force. Our next article by Sean Heasley, Disability Employment Hits Record High. The number of people with disabilities across the nation who are employed at its highest level since federal officials started keeping track. The U.S. Department of Labor's Bureau of Labor Statistics says that 22.5% of people with disabilities had jobs in 2023. That's an increase of 1.2 percentage points from the year before and is the most since the agency started collecting data on disability employment in 2008. The findings come from an annual report out this month that's based on information gathered last year through the Current Population Survey, a monthly survey of some 60,000 households about employment and unemployment in the U.S. Despite the gains, the employment rate for people with disabilities was roughly a third of that for general population, and unemployment rates remained much higher for those with disabilities compared to others, no matter their level of education. Across all age groups, people with disability were much less likely to be employed than those with no disability, the Labor Department found. People with disabilities were almost twice as likely as others to work part-time, and a larger percentage of these individuals were self-employed, the data shows. They were also more commonly employed in service and occupations and were much less likely to work in management and professional positions. Overall, about three-quarters of people with disabilities were considered to be not in the labor force, the vast majority of whom did not want a job. Next story written by Colleen Schrappen of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. Autism diagnoses are soaring. Here's how some colleges are responding. The picture accompanying the article shows a young man with a disability using adaptive equipment in a study hall environment. First time Haley Hall went to college, it was 2008. She lived in Georgia and had been diagnosed with autism 4 years before. In high school, the diagnosis meant she had access to smaller classes and a therapy group that helped with social skills. But when college started, that all stopped. I was responsible for everything, said Hall, 35, who lives in Baldwin. She ended up dropping out. Since Hall was diagnosed 2 decades ago, the number of children with autism has shot up from 1 in 125 to 1 in 36. Now college administrators across the country are responding, training staff adapting to learning differences, and promoting self-advocacy. A few local universities are even touting some success. Small steps, they say, appear to be working. Webster University has a resource center where students learn logic, or strategies, that is, to cope with the rigors of college. St. Louis University assembled a sensory room with a tabletop fountain and a miniature rock garden. It had hundreds of visits last year. And the University of Missouri-St. Louis has a 2-year program that fosters interpersonal and life skills. It's a retention issue, said Jonathan Digis, the director of UMSL's Office of Inclusive Postsecondary Education. What we can do to help them persist through their undergraduate degree to help them unlock their next steps. Autism spectrum disorder, a developmental disability, has no correlation with intelligence. It is marked by difficulty with social interactions, communication deficits, and repetitive behaviors. And for many, it makes college difficult. The rate of completion for students with autism lags that of the general post-secondary population, 39% to 59%, according to the National Institutes of Health. In elementary and secondary schools, adaptations, as mandated by Federal Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, have become routine. Fidget toys and movement breaks reduce stress and improve concentration. Visual cues and written instructions clarify daily expectations. After high school, the legal framework around disability changes. Adult students are covered by the Americans with Disabilities Act, which prohibits discrimination but has no metrics for individual progress. The onus to articulate needs and ask for assistance shifts from school to the student. Higher education has been inching toward inclusion, advocates say, but there is a long way to go. And the measures taken, like classroom modifications or informational campaigns, are mostly voluntary. Colleges have been slow to catch on, said Lee Burnett Williams of the College Autism Network, a national advocacy and research nonprofit. Feels like those students have just fallen off a cliff of support, said Burnett Williams. What inevitably happens is they don't succeed. Almost all campuses have an office that provides resources to students with documented disabilities, but comprehensive support programs for autism are rare. The first one, at Marshall University in West Virginia, opened in 2002. Today, there are about 100 such programs, according to the College Autism Network. The transition to college is a jolt for almost any 18-year-old. No one checks to make sure you're studying or even attending class. Sleeping and eating habits fluctuate. The guardrails of childhood are gone. Students with autism often also struggle with isolation, unpredictable schedules, and an increased emphasis on grades, experts say. Everything looks so different, said Latoya Griffin, the academic coordinator at Webster University's Resource Center, known as REAG. We are teaching students to self-advocate so they can come on campus and thrive. Dara Massey, age 24, earned her associate's degree before enrolling at Webster in the fall of 2020. Getting her point across to professors and classmates has always been a challenge. I sometimes ramble, said Massey, who lives in Ferguson. But the REAG has given her strategies. Take a deep breath. Write it down. Massey, who is majoring in animation, expects to graduate this spring. Her drawings help her communicate as well. I like creating characters to tell different stories, she said. 3 years ago, SLU's Center for Accessibility and Disability Resources applied for a $3,000 grant to build a sensory room on campus. The therapeutic spaces, commonplace in grade schools, house items like beanbags, weighted blankets, and bubble tubes that people can use to calm themselves or regain focus. Occupational therapy professor Sarah Zimmerman enlisted her students to design SLU's version, which includes a cocoon swing and adjustable music and lighting. There's not a lot of areas to decompress and recharge, said Zimmerman. Why would that not benefit our kids in college? It took some time for the room to catch on. In its first year, only 5 students visited. Last year, more than 230 students accessed the space, signing up for 30-minute slots with an app. Kayla Baker, a junior from Overland studying education, makes regular appointments there for an escape from the day-to-day stressors that come with autism. She goes about her routine little things, things many people are oblivious to, drain her, small talk, eye contact, background noises. There are also checklist items I have to manually consider throughout the day, said Baker. Even with all the accommodations in the world, I can never not be autistic. The long-term goal is to build another sensory room at the opposite end of the campus, said Kendra Johnson, the director of SLU's Resource Center. It's an expensive start and you have to replenish it, Johnson said, but it would be very beneficial. The LINK program for students with autism at UMSL launched 5 years ago. It follows the model of the University Succeed Initiative, which serves students with intellectual disabilities. Each semester, a couple dozen students enroll in LINK at a cost of about $2,600, plus regular tuition. The program, which lasts 2 years, goes beyond academics, covering independent living, interpersonal skills, and career planning, said Legist, the UMSL director. When students complete LINK, they earn a certificate or continue on toward a 4-year degree. For the long time, a credential of any kind seemed out of reach for Connor Stewart, age 24. School is not that easy, said Stewart, who lives in the central West End. But LINK, which he finished last year, benefited him from inside the classroom, with tutoring and extended test times and out. Stewart learned to navigate that Metrolink, buy groceries, and manage his money. He practiced writing a resume and doing interviews and then landed a job at the St. Louis Zoo. Stewart still meets with a coach once a week. Now he's working toward a bachelor's in history, though his childhood on a farm and his work at the zoo are pulling him towards something with animals. The college experience is not always rosy. Some professors are not as understanding. Some classmates are not as friendly, but most are. And Link has put Stewart on a path he likely would not have considered otherwise. "It's been life-changing," said his mom, Charlene Stewart of Millstadt. Hall, who dropped out of Georgia Gwinnett College more than a decade ago, never thought she'd return. But her husband encouraged her to give it another go, and she enrolled in St. Louis Community College in 2022. On the Merrimack campus tour, she saw the Access Office for Students with Disabilities. The number of students with autism using the Access Office has almost tripled over the last decade, from 54 to 158, according to Director Amy Bird. A true count of students with autism is difficult because it's up to them whether they disclose a diagnosis. The Access Office staff identifies, in partnership with the student, what kinds of interventions will facilitate their learning, from wearing headphones during lectures to adding closed captioning to films. Instructor notification forms, which outline needed accommodations, provide a directive to professors who might otherwise be left in the dark. But the office's purpose is not just about the academic success, said Bird. Everyone wants a sense of belonging, she said. Finding your people when you're here is important. The space has become a touchstone for Hall, who is studying fine arts. She works there a few hours a week as an assistant and checks in with Bird or other staff members on her off days. They're very happy to have me there, said Hall, which is a nice feeling. Our next article, written by Michelle Diament of Disability Scoop. Feds take steps to shore up disability caregiver workforce. There is a picture that accompanies this article showing a worker in a home working with two young men with apparent cognitive and physical disabilities. The Biden administration is rolling out a host of new initiatives aimed at addressing the severe shortage of workers supporting people with disabilities living in the community. With the paratechnical assistance opportunities, an online information hub, and a webinar series, federal officials said they're looking to boost systems for recruiting, retraining, and developing direct care workers across the nation. The moves from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Administration for Community Living comes as disability service providers have struggled in recent years to maintain and grow their stable of direct support professionals, limiting the supports available to people with disabilities. A survey last fall of hundreds of providers of community-based services to people with intellectual and developmental disabilities found that staffing shortages had forced 77% to stop accepting referrals, while nearly half had cut back on their offerings. Now, federal officials are unveiling a new website to serve as a national hub of information from government agencies, advocates, and other stakeholders about the best practices for bolstering direct care workforce. The resource is part of the Direct Care Workforce Strategy Center, which was created by the Administration for Community Living in 2022 and is tasked with providing technical assistance to states and service providers on issues related to the direct care workforce. In addition, the Strategy Center is offering state agencies two different opportunities to receive individualized technical assistance to help grow the availability of support staff for people with disabilities, and the center is launching a webinar series for states and stakeholders on this particular topic. Urgent action is needed to address the shortage of direct care professionals, which is threatening to reverse decades of progress in community living, said Allison Barkoff, who leads the Administration for Community Living. The Direct Care Workforce Strategy Center was created to strengthen collaboration across state agencies, direct care professionals, people receiving services, and other stakeholders in order to improve recruitment, retention, and development of this critical workforce, she said, adding that the new initiatives are an exciting step forward and toward this goal. Well, that is all the time we have for today. This has been Kevin with Able Living. Hope you've enjoyed today's reading from the audio reading service at the Allen County Public Library in Fort Wayne, Indiana.